Hello, everyone. It's Friday, the 2nd of September, and welcome to episode 119 of the Kite Podcast with me, Ben Eagle.
And me, Will Evans. It's good to be back. We'd forgotten how to make podcasts, hadn't we, Ben? So it's
a little rusty.
And we're now officially in meteorological autumn, although astronomical Ben always gives me the big words, you will have all noticed. Astronomical autumn doesn't actually start until 23rd of September. It is, however, the time of year when we expect milk volumes to be at their lowest. So we thought, who better to discuss this than Kite partner Paul Mason and Chris Walkland. We're also joined, fresh back from a holiday and looking lovely and suntanned, by podcast producer and senior consultant at Kite, Becky Leach. Chris, where are you this week? And can you give us an update on the milk markets since we last spoke?
Yes, well, I'm bringing you my report from inside a milk tanker today, taking your fabulous milk or our listeners' fabulous milk to my brilliant markets, or rubbish markets, depending. And that's assuming that those idiots from Animal Rebellion don't get in the way this week. But thankfully, I've got the solution to those irritating protesters. What you do is you simply weld a snowplow blade to the front of a milk tanker and charge on regardless, pushing said demonstrators out of the way. Brilliantly creative solution from yours truly. Anyway, we're back with our Becky, and these last 2 weeks I've been like a Springer Spaniel with his tail in a splint without her. I freely admit, I completely lost my mahjong. Yes, I did.
Chris, it's mojo. You lost your mojo, not your mahjong.
Oh, right. Mojo. Well, there you are. So first things first, Rebecca, did you have a nice holiday? Did you miss us? Did you go somewhere fun? I mean, what could be funner than doing this podcast?
I, of course, miss you guys, but some lounger and a cocktail in hand did help me get over the pain a little bit.
Just a little bit.
well, I wasn't sure which order, yes, no, yes, no, no, yes, went in then.
If you managed to get a lie on a sun lounger with a cocktail in your hand, then your child is different to mine.
or I'm doing parenting wrong, Will.
Well, you must be doing parenting right, I think.
Anyway, it's nice to have you back. But did our lovely listener miss us? And if they did, what have they missed? Well, while we've been off air, I think is the technical term. Well, from my point of view, there have been some positives. First, let's have a look at currency, where the pound has just seen its biggest fall in 7 years. So actually, what does this mean for you farmers? Well, the euro has been trading against the British pound at around 118 to 119 in recent months, but now it's down below 116. And to give you an example as to what that means, butter at 7,000 euros, which is where it is about now, converts to over 6,000 pounds, 6,050 sterling. And that's 150 quid more than at 118. And compared to the rate of 120 euros, where it was 6 months ago, butter's worth £250 more. And the same is true for skim milk powder. So with butter and skim combination, we could see milk prices inflated by about 1.5 pence, 1 to 1.5 pence. And that's in theory anyway. In practice, rest assured you won't be getting that in your milk checks. At this point, Becky, I'd give you a similar comparison for the euro against the Yorkshire pound, but I can't, as the latter never sees the light of day, as we know.
Simply kept in my wallet, Chris.
Apologies to any oversensitive Yorkshire person there. So, second bit of good news, the Dutch Dairy Board increased its prices for the first time since the spring across the board last week. And this time around, well, butter increased again. Skim powder was stable to positive. Yeah, whole milk powder dropped, but whey was very positive again. So commodity prices look as if they are ticking back up slowly and steadily compared to where they were. Although some skim powder manufacturers aren't as positive just yet, as they say the market is still pretty dead. So on the traded butter market, yeah, that dropped as low as 6,700 euros in recent weeks. But again, as I said earlier, traders are reporting it at over 7,000 euros now. And with currency, UK butters at almost 6,100 sterling. Cream in Europe was as low as 8,150 euros. It's now 8,500 euros. And that's equivalent to £2.90 here. But our price isn't quite as high as that. And skim powder had steadily dropped to 3,550, but the latest reports put that 100 euros or so up. So in milk price terms, the commodities dropped to the equivalent of 43 pence in mid-August. I reckon they're probably back up to 46 pence now. And the futures too, they're showing a bit more positivity. EU butter have climbed again. They're over 7,000 euros to 7,200, 7,300 for September. And skim milk had a decent two-week run of gains, but has dipped marginally this week. And again, their combination on the futures points to a milk price of 47p. They dropped to as low as 44. And with the GDT having tanked over recent weeks, it's nice to see New Zealand whole milk powder futures picking up as well. That should, in theory, boost the sentiment on the GDT, but whether that happens, we won't know until next week. On cheese, Edam and Gouda are both barometers of sentiment, as the prices of these tend to buckle first in a weakening market. Well, they've bounced to 5,200 euros. They were down as low as 4,850. But mozzarella is still strong in the UK at 4,650 sterling. So more positive signals here. As for mild cheddar, well, I think it's fair to say cheesemakers and I are completely baffled as to why AHDB has quoted £4,700 for mild cheddar for August. I don't know any UK processor who sold or would sell for that price. My price for the Provision Trade Federation, I do a report every 2 weeks for them, is £4,900, so £200 more. So basically, AHDB has posted a drop in cheese prices just at a time when milk volumes are tanking to the trough and show no signs of increasing, when some cheesemakers are still increasing their prices, and when cheese stocks are still very tight. It's manna from heaven for the retailers, and I, like the cheesemakers, just don't get it. I don't get it at all. So possible explanation, well, I did hear of a few Dutch traders touting cheese around in late July, August at 4,700 sterling, but volumes were tiny, and this does not represent the market here. I'm also told that energy costs to make cheese will be increasing by £100 a tonne in October, so the last thing processors need are prices to be talked down like this. We'll see if there's a correction. I hope there is, because the figure is manifestly wrong. And I certainly am going to be sticking to my guns at 4,900. Finally, spot milk is in the very high 50 pence range, about 58 pence, I hear. So that's it from me. Now to our guest, Mr. Paul Numbers Mesa, and some more of me. You see what happens when Becky goes away on holiday? She inflicts a double dose of me on you when she gets back. Over to you then, Bill, to get the grilling underway.
Thank you, Chris. Paul, welcome back to the show. Hope you've had a good summer. Are we at the lowest point yet when it comes to milk volumes?
Morning, guys, and thanks for having me back. Good to see you all again. I think based on the latest information that we've got, I suspect that we are either now at the bottom or very close. The seven-day averages have, I think, probably bottomed out towards the end of August. But when we are at the when we are at this stage in the year, there is there's always a few bumps along the road. So it's never very easy to say definitively until after the event. But all things being equal, we've seen no indication from calving patterns and those sorts of things that the shape of the curve should be very much different this year to last year. Unlike the spring trough, spring flush rather, which tends to have a pretty short peak before dropping off again rapidly, the trough period is a much more lengthy affair as a rule. Last year was a particular case in point when we had 7 day averages dropped to about just under 32.5 million litres in early August, and we were still at the same level by mid December, and that was largely because we had some pretty ropey forage to deal with as we went into the winter last year, and there were some very, very unhealthy cash flows on farms as well. In a more normal year, we'd expect to see a bit of a rise come mid September, and then, as I say, some humps along the way. But a slow and steady increase as we run into the winter, as the block carvers start to get over onto more bigger contributions into the output there.
Yeah. So in terms of milk volumes generally this year, we seem to have been down on average. Has the gap narrowed at all, or is the trend continuing?
Yes, it's been a funny old picture, really. In April and at the start of the year, we were running sort of 1.5 to 2% under 2021 levels. This then sort of closed up through the late spring and into the summer, and by the end of July, we were almost at parity with 2021. But August has been a really, really difficult time. We're now sort of 2.5 to 3% below 2021. And we've got to go back to 2016, when the industry was just recovering from that massive downturn, to see numbers, at similar levels to where they are now. So we've seen some rain in most areas, it's been enough to green things up, but not much more for the most part. But most of the country is still pretty dry. I suspect we'll see the gap at similar levels to currently for a few more weeks until we get some more grass coming and more cows go on to winter diets. The hot weather has been pretty unpleasant for us at times, but it's been absolutely awful for cows. And that, coupled with the forage supplies, has made things really really difficult last 5 to 6 weeks.
I think it's probably only greened up in what John would call the north, i.e. above the M4. But in the south, I think it's pretty awful still. And I think one important point to make is, when you talk of parity with July, August last year, that's only because milk volumes started to drop off in July, August last year. And if we go back 2 years or so, or against the average, we are still well down. So I wouldn't want anybody to get the impression that volumes have normalized compared to the previous year. They haven't. They're just matching last year, because the drop started last year.
Can we talk about the traders, Chris? How busy are they at the moment? How much trade is going on?
Probably not a lot still. I don't think I can remember a period of time when the summer seems to have been so long for the traders. They seem to be off for ages and the market quiet for ages. This week was still effectively a bank holiday week. Well, it was a bank holiday on the Monday, so some still won't be back. Next week, they will be all back at their desks. And I think they'll be looking at what their quarter four and quarter one 23 order books will be, trying to assess what demand might be. And that's still a pretty impossible task, given that nobody has seen a situation like this before. Mm-hmm. And they'll be trying to match up the two to see where the holes are in their order books and, you know, trying to assess what supply is likely to be.
And the wider
industry will get busier.
Yeah. And the wider industry, what are you hearing on the ground in terms of sort of their thinking going forward to the next quarter?
On volumes or on sentiment?
I suppose sentiment, really.
I think they're all worried about milk volumes. They really are worried about milk volumes. Probably more worried about demand, especially the brand holders, because of the unique situation that we are in and the media rhetoric, which is go to the discounters and buy own label.
Yeah.
You know, that could be a significant disruptor for a number of years if consumer habits change in the long term. So I think we're at that difficult stage and that extremely uncertain stage. But there are, as I said in my report, some positives. And I think if milk volumes weren't as they are, we could be facing a bit of a tricky time.
Mm-hmm. So what effect is the dry summer having on those milk volumes at the moment, Paul? And do you think there'll be any lasting effects into autumn and winter?
Well, as we've already alluded to, at the moment, volumes have been absolutely trashed. And we are, you know, in fairly uncharted territory as far as daily production is concerned. A lot of grazing cows haven't seen any grass for weeks, and I suspect that there'll be some early dry-offs and culls in the spring calving herds. So their contribution to the milk pool is going to drop off very, very rapidly as we head into the autumn. Autumn block calvers, again, carving onto very little grass, where producers of grass and nettle put these cows onto winter diets. With the exception of some heat stress events, cows are milking reasonably well. Where the extra feed isn't being supplied, then cows are struggling. In the main, I'd say that house cows are faring pretty well and milking better than last year because they're on better forage from first cut 2022. As far as the longer term effects are concerned, then it can be quite a surprising one, really. Historically, in winters after very dry summers, cows have milked well as they've tended to be better fed. The illusion that autumn grass is nutritionally adequate is not put to the test because it's not there. So moving through the autumn and into the winter, I suspect that we'll start to see the gap closing as we head into the winter. But as Chris has already alluded to, we need to bear in mind that last winter was a shocker. And so even if we do move ahead on volume like for like compared to 2021-22, it's still not going to be a bumper year by any stretch of the imagination.
Love that Mr. Data and Detail himself quoted, milk volumes are trashed. No numbers. Let's just throw out the big words.
I'm afraid the crystal ball is somewhat murky at the moment.
Clearly.
Yeah, you'd be good. Good headline writer on that one. I was talking to somebody yesterday, and they've got contacts in France. And they were saying that the maize and the sunflower crops have just withered. They're just not worth harvesting. They're not even bothering to harvest the maize and the sunflowers in parts because it's not worth spending the diesel on it. There's no nutritional value in it whatsoever. And we've seen on the news some of the images of the drought in Europe and the rivers. Well, Becky won't, because she'd have been, you know, plastered on a sunbed, but most of us here will have seen those images. And I think that what I heard in France about France will be the same in Germany. And those are the two big EU nations. Over here, I've heard some stories about farmers with maize that they gave up on the maize, basically, and presumably just put a forage harvester through it. I don't know whether you can comment about that, Paul.
Yep. Seen pictures of foragers sort of whole cropping maize with the tops of the plants no higher than the wheels of the trailers. And you know, that was a few weeks ago. I think as with everything in agriculture, there are regional variations. Anecdotally, yeah, through August we were all going to hell in a handcart. But there are parts of the northwest have had a bumper grass year. But that sort of fairly specific area apart, the rest of the country are pretty concerned about forage stocks to a greater or lesser degree. With that in mind, to try and get a slightly more measured view, we did carry out the survey which we sent out with the podcast a couple of weeks ago. And a big thank you to everybody that did fill that in, because it's really, really useful to have that that real-time data. And it was a pretty scary picture, actually. At the time, three quarters of farms had less grazing to go at than they would normally have at that time of year, and 10% saying that they had nothing at all. And I can well believe that, having, you know, driven around quite a lot of the East Midlands over the last few weeks. In terms of grass silage stocks, about 60% had less than normal. And of the guys that were growing maize, 60% of them said that they were expecting crops to be below par. So, yeah, quite scary. But we've still got some time for some late cuts of grass silage. In 2018, we were silaging into November. A number of farms took some strategic cuts of whole crop cereals. And although it was, or it seems a long time ago now, we did have a very good April and May for grass growth. So stocks were generally good going into the drought. But that being said, it has been a real draw on stocks, and with the, you know, with the lack of regrowth as well. In that survey, the final question was, how do you expect the forage situation to impact on your milk output this year? And 58% said that they expected forage supplies to have some negative effect on their individual farm output. So, yeah, it's quite a, you know, quite a difficult picture that we're facing.
What's the analysis coming back like on those early cut forages, and how are they feeding on farm?
Again, it's quite regional. The guys who got off to a good start and did first cuts in April and early May, we've got some pretty decent stuff in there. Where the weather stopped harvest getting off to an early start. So, you know, these areas in the northwest where there are big piles of forage, I think the quality is less good. You know, obviously we have that that juxtaposition all the time that the better the stuff is, the faster it disappears. And the good quality silage is being lapped up fairly rapidly at the moment. But certainly the guys that have got on the multi-cut scenario, we've got some nice forage. Fibre levels are significantly down on where they were last year, and intakes are up, and milk is up on those herds that are, you know, fully housed and eating that silage compared to the wire that they had to chew through last year.
What time to be alive on a wet farm this year, isn't it?
Yeah. What we sort of discussed the forage qualities there, Paul. But what about the quality of the maize? Do you think? I know there's some very mixed looking crops of maize around in this part of the world. It doesn't look too bad, but would you predict it'd be fairly decent quality stuff?
Yeah, I think for the most part, where maize got up and got away, we're not seeing any sort of, or not many 10-foot crops. You know, most of them have sort of tasseled at sort of 6 foot or thereabouts. So the total weight is not going to be that good. But walking crops this week, there's some good cobs on them. The overall quality and starch levels should be reasonably good, but the volumes are obviously going to be down by quite a significant percentage in some cases. And the other thing I will just say is, if you haven't had a walk through your maize recently, do so, because it's ripening very, very quickly. We'll be seeing some foragers going in the next 10 days to a fortnight, I suspect.
God, what a frightening thought that is. Okay. What's the sentiment from farmers at the moment then, Paul? I mean, we've talked about, I guess people are fairly concerned, but you've also said we have been here before. So what are the farmers you speak to?
Yeah, I think, despite the forage situation, I'd say that on the whole sentiment is improving compared to where it was earlier in the year, but still fragile. Even the suppliers of the dairies that were slower out of the traps and increasing milk prices have seen a couple of milk checks with numbers in the mid 40s now. And although input prices are continuing to surge, then there is, there is more cash available now. Businesses that bought feed well have got some really good milk price feed price ratios, and they're in a good place to produce milk this winter. So as ever, there's the haves and the have nots. And the big question is, particularly given how quickly we saw the edge come off the markets through June and July, people are nervous about how long can this last. So there is, there is always this glancing over your shoulder to see where the next big cloud is coming from. Particularly, taking into account the issues that Chris has raised about reduced demand and how that's going to affect the industry on a global scale.
Mm. And Chris, can you finish off with a bit of positivity?
I think the positivity is that things are probably better than some would have expected. If you look 2 weeks ago, things are moving in the right direction. But nervous is the operative word, I think. And so much is outside of the control of anybody, really. I mean, if you take those people that are drying milk, and that will decline at this time of year. But are they going to be able to get gas in Europe? Mm-hmm. And if they can get it, if it's not rationed, what price are they going to pay for the gas? And can they afford to buy the milk and buy the gas to dry the milk? Against that, though, the olive oil crop has pretty much failed, so I hear, in Italy. The sunflower crop isn't doing much good. So the price of oil is going to be high. Is that going to boost the price of butter? You either use oil or you use butter.
Yeah.
So it's a really difficult time, I think. And until the schools go back next week, until there is some, we've got a few more weeks of post-holiday normality under our belts, I think it's very difficult to see a direction of travel, other than the fact that things are a bit better than they were. And if the futures are right, if that's the reflection of the sentiment, and but there's very little traded on the futures, remember, but if that is right and the GDT starts to turn and nothing major happens on milk volumes, which it won't, then I can see, you know, markets continue to edge up, I think.
Cautious but optimism.
From a farmer point of view, I think I can't see many more milk price increases coming through. Okay. Those at the top, I think, will stay. We've already seen one come off at the top. 50 pence have dropped, one at 50 pence has dropped to 49, I think. Some at the bottom may well keep increasing because the gap is too great between their rivals. So those lower down the table will edge up. But I think we're at the peak of the milk price that farmers are going to get. And I don't think they should be asking for any more, because we've got to hold the line now. We've got to hold what we've got for as long as possible. And the more the farmers push, the quicker those prices will come down.
Okay. All right, then. A lot to think about today. Well, that's all we have time for. But a big thank you to our guests, Paul Mason, Chris Walkland, and podcast producer Becky Leach.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back with you next week. But for now, it's goodbye from all of us here.